Your friend offers you unsolicited advice for those chicken breasts.
Yo, you should sauté those.
What does it mean to sauté them? Is that really a thing, or just a way to say, use a hot pan and cram the meat into the pan? As we continue the Escoffier series, we'll get into what he means by sauté and what happens when the process is not followed. The Eating Liberty Podcast, episode 257, Food and Freedom, Once a Week for Life. Dan Reed here. Welcome back to the show. The Escoffier series continues with the continuation of Chapter 7, The Principles of Cooking. The focus today is sautés. August has been one crazy month. Between family outings, which we had a lot of fun, kids' sports and summer camps, I am looking forward to some peace and quiet in a routine again. We're continuing the Escoffier series, and this is a look at sautéing. Escoffier has some pretty particular things to say, and then there's what happens when the cook gets busy. By way of review and a setup, we've covered wet methods of cooking. Poaching and braising and poiling. Sauteing is a dry, hot heat. A hot pan. How hot is hot? And some oil. How much? Escoffier will use butter, and even though he rarely says so, he means clarified butter or other clean fats, and he does say oil. He doesn't specify what oil. I would guess, given the time frame of him writing, probably olive oil. For me, sautéing means lard, or usually it's rendered, easy for me to say, bacon fat. I have used beef fat. I keep that. I keep all the fat. I use everything. But anyway, and that's good stuff for sautéing, and it's good for making eggs in the morning. But we're not talking about eggs. That was already another show. So lard, tallow, duck fat, goose fat, chicken fat, any rendered animal fat that is strained, and then depending on if there's a lot of water in it, you cool it, then pull it out of the container in the water at the bottom, add that to Fido's kibble if you want to. But that clean, clarified fat is what we want for sautéing. Now, a key distinction for sautés is the meat to be cooked is cut into thin strips or small pieces. And as we'll see in a minute, sometimes not. Here's where the sticky parts start. For Escoffier, the idea of a sautéed piece of steak is to both sear and cook the meat. He will use the word seize, as in seize the outside of the meat to make it contract. The intended purpose is to develop caramelization on the meat and get some of the juices that are going to come out, because that's what happens, some of those juices to form a glaze or a fond on the bottom of the pan. Now, remember, we talked about the fond or the foundation in several places. Soups and sauces, probably, for sure, and in previous episodes also. That's flavor down there, and we're going to get to that. So, sear the piece of steak. Now, here's our first problem. It has long been thought that searing meat seals in the juices. Even Escoffier writes as much with this passage, quote, "All foods cooked in this manner must be seized, which means they must be set to cook in very hot fat so that a coating is quickly formed on the outside, which is capable of preventing the juices from escaping," end quote. If you have ever seared a steak, or even grilled a steak, but since we're talking about searing, sear the steak and let it rest on a plate for 5 minutes, you know that the sear is not waterproof. I find it a bit curious and ironic that just a few paragraphs later, he writes this, quote, "The smaller and thinner the pieces are, the quicker they must be seized. When blood appears on the uncooked surface, the pieces should be turned over, and when pink beads of juice arise on the browned surface, they are cooked to the correct degree," end quote. Frankly, it pains me to note that he contradicts himself so quickly. At no point ever in meat cookery history was a seared piece of meat sealed to hold in the juices. It never happened. Myth one busted. For pieces of meat, particularly pointed out by Escoffier, are poultry and game, these meats are to be finished on top of the stove with a lidded pan or in the oven with an unlidded pan and basted from time to time. Now, I'm not going to go too much into it, but I don't believe, I'll have to look for it. I don't think basting does what Granny thought it did. if basting kept the meat dry, the turkey dry, now Granny's sawdust turkey would have been a whole hell of a lot better. So I don't think basting does what anybody ever thinks it does, but that's another show. So this lidded versus unlidded, stovetop versus oven brings us to a couple of questions. Escoffier plainly is not cooking boneless, skinless chicken breasts. Is he using extra fat? The fat he's using for basting is being rendered from the skin, so it's showing up in the pan as the skin cooks in the pan. He's also not cooking a lidded pan on high. Depending on the pan and how much meat is in that pan, he's cooking that at a heat hot enough to keep cooking the food, but low enough not to burn the meat or the drippings. It's woefully imprecise and exactly how it should be done. It can get a little frustrating. Finishing the meat in the oven is much easier. It's a tad bit or a lot bit cleaner, certainly on the stovetop and the counter, and in the oven makes room on the stovetop for more pans. Now, here is a second problem that might only be a problem to a few select people. A seared skin-on chicken breast finished in a lidded pan will make the crispy skin not crispy. I know a few people who find flaccid chicken skin a preference. That condition is not made better in service where the meat will be sauced on top. Crispy skin adds one more hash mark in favor of lid-off oven-finished cooking. In either case, stovetop or oven, the glaze in the pan, those brown bits are vitally important for the sauce. The deglazing process is simply adding the appropriate liquid, which for Escoffier might be wine, but probably the complementary stock going into the pan. Generally not very much, depending, let's say you're doing one chicken or pheasant breast, skin on, of course. And you've got a little 8-inch aluminum, probably stainless, 8-inch stainless pan. So you've got a nice little fond in there, not more than half a cup would be my guess. That's what I would use, not more than that. The liquid is going to boil almost immediately, so watch the steam, but also scrape those meaty, drippy bits off while the liquid remains. It is also a good time to interject, that Teflon is never a good choice for pans, and certainly not when you need to scrape the meaty bits off. Let's review. Whole chicken breast or whole skin on pheasant breast. They can be boneless if they're butchered properly. That's what's for dinner. Yeah, I know, it's supposed to be beef in that song. Or perhaps thin slices of sirloin steak. Heat the pan. Uh-oh, what pan? How big? This is where sautéing falls apart, even in some professional kitchens. The key feature of sauté is a hot pan, a sear on the meat, but not a burnt pan. A pan that's too large for the items to be cooked will burn where there is no meat. So let's go back to that single pheasant breast. So we have one pheasant breast. It's probably, well, if it's a good sized bird, let's say it's the size of your hand. Let's say it's a chicken breast, skin on, wing on. It's the size of your hand, and you're using a 12-inch pan. Plainly, that's more pan, to borrow a phrase, that's too much car. That's more pan than you need for that one chicken breast. So what's going to happen is the oil's going to coat the whole bottom. You're going to be cooking in one spot, and the pan is going to start to get brown where the oil is burning off. That's not a flavor we want in our sauce. So the right size pan is the right size of the pan is the size that's going to hold the thing that you're cooking. Now, it doesn't need to be exact. If it's got a little bit of wiggle room on the side, that's fine. Conversely, a pan that's too small or overcrowded with meat will never sear the meat. All your, and that doesn't, no matter how hot you get it, you can get it red hot. At some point, it's going to end up making a low bubbling sound. It won't even really be a searing sound. All you'll probably hear is the sound of water boiling, because what's happening is the heat is sufficient to extract the water from the meat, but the heat is insufficient to form a sear. We already know the sear isn't waterproof, but the sear is flavor. We want that. If you've ever made Taco Tuesday taco meat and put a pound of hamburger in the pan and see all this water come out and the meat looks gray, well, that's too much meat in too small of a pan. That's not a saute. That's, they call that sweating. That's not even stewing. It's just boiled. It's English. You've made British tacos. The pan issue never really goes away. The pan issue problem never really goes away. It is never the case, and has never been the case so far, that I cook all the pieces of steak or all the chicken thighs or all the chicken breasts to the same degree of doneness at the exact same time. At some point, part of the pan is exposed to heat and nothing is in that spot. I move the pieces of meat around to keep those spots partially occupied until the meat is done, and then move on to deglazing or adding the vegetables if that's the next step. Challenge number two resembles Taco Tuesday night and is the next advance in sautéing. Instead of thick slices of steak or portions of skin on chicken, we can combine dry and wet cooking, similar to a braise, but not exactly the same, with different cuts of meat. The term Escoffier uses is ragu, and it is more a stew than a braise. And instead of using thin pieces of steak or whole pieces of meat, it's going to use what you would think about as stew meat, smaller pieces. Now, some of the principles and fundamentals remain for a braise, and the first one is don't crowd the pan. Now, here's where the sauté breaks down again. I've browned meat pieces in portions few enough to not even cover the bottom of the pan completely to ensure a good sear on every piece. It's time-consuming. But here's the rub. Standing in front of an overcrowded pan and the heat drops so low that no searing ever takes place, and the meat kind of just boils, takes as long to watch as it does to watch browning in three or four steps to get that good sear. The big difference is the flavor is not the same on that boiled meat, and the texture of the finished meat is not the same. I give home cooks a wide berth, since there's a lot they have to deal with that isn't food, and I'm in no position to correct somebody who didn't ask for it, who is only trying to feed the family. Restaurant cooks were never given such grace. Just like the ossobuco was made better by giving it a good deep sear, the stew is made better by browning well each piece of meat. That color ends up as flavor, and actually also as texture in the bite of the finished stew, and a darker color, which also means flavor, in the stew juice. Searing a 16-ounce New York strip steak is not sautéing. You can finish the steak in the oven and at least come close enough to satisfy Escoffier's condition that large pieces of meat be cooked in the pan in the oven. Then you saute the steak, and a good deglaze with some green peppercorns, a splash or two of brandy, and some good brown veal stock will make it better than average pan sauce. Oh, a little bit of shallots, mint, brunoise is a cut. It's a small cut. Like a small diced shallots or red onions, just fine. Add that in with the peppercorns to get a little bit of caramel, so you get the sweet from the onion. Then add the brandy, and if you're using a gas burner, mind the flames, because they're going to come. Don't put your face over the pan. That's not a good idea. Electric probably wouldn't do that, but you get a snootful of alcohol that will make you probably take a step back anyway. Yeah, that's a good idea. And just like grilling or cooking any large piece of meat, small pieces of meat will benefit from a few minutes of rest time. This also gives you time, that New York strip, that pheasant breast, even strips of New York, thinner cuts of New York strip. It gives you time to take them out of the pan, let them rest, put them on a plate, make your pan sauce, and the juice that comes out of the meat onto the plate, add that to your finished sauce. Or add that even to the sauce as it's being made, because all that is flavor. No other, what better place do you have to put it than in the sauce you're going to eat with the meat it came from? Reduce that down to the right consistency. Add a little bit of butter, whisk that in at the end, which will help thicken it just a little bit. But boy, the velvety luxuriousness of that buttered sauce and a little bit of flavor on that seared meat, sautéed. Oh, man. Yeah, that's good stuff. All right, folks. This is a short episode today about sautés, and that's going to do it. Chapter 7 does keep going. We have yet to cover gratins, which... hard isn't the right word. They can present some challenges at home, where at the restaurant you've got the device dedicated entirely to broiling stuff and gratinating stuff. Don't have that at home, probably. I don't have that at home. So it's a different challenge, but man, those are fun to have. Was also grilling to finish, to cover, and deep frying. If you know anyone heading off this fall to culinary school, my book, 50 Things to Know About Being a Chef, might be the perfect gift for this new journey someone's going to start. Find it on Amazon or on my Amazon author page on the show notes. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. We'll be right back.
Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.